The theme of the scriptures is the promise of Christ and the coming of Christ and the meaning of that. And you can lose that in pietism.
Dr. Rod Rosenblatt, co-host of the White Horse Inn radio show, speaking at the Issues, Etc. Making the Case conference.
The common emphasis is the emphasis on sanctification. Sounds good, biblical, it is. But you get the emphasis on the wrong syllable, and we'll lose our own children.
You can listen to Dr. Rosenblatt's presentation, Making the Case Against Pietism, and all of our presentations from this year's conference on our new audio DVD. For a donation of $300 to Issues, Etc. before Labor Day, we'll send you this audio DVD. For more information, look for the DVD logo on our homepage, issuesetc.org.
The Holy Trinity Bach Choir of New York, with a hymn that grows on you the more you listen to it and sing it, Christ Mighty Savior, playing right now at LutheranPublicRadio.org. It's our sacred music station. It's 24/7. It's sacred music wall-to-wall, 365 days a year, but following the course of the church's year. LutheranPublicRadio.org. It's absolutely free. If you haven't listened, you can listen anytime, any place, through any device, LutheranPublicRadio.org. The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod is meeting this week in its 65th regular convention. They hold these conventions every 3 years, and this year it's in St. Louis. It follows upon a convention 3 years ago that was, I think, a kind of an historic turning point for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Joining us for an update on the 65th regular convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, Molly Ziegler-Hemingway, a reporter in Washington, D.C., and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Molly, welcome back to Issues, Etc.
Thank you for having me here.
You were there on the scene 3 years ago in Houston in 2010 at what I consider a pretty important turning point for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. How does this convention this year so far compare with that one 3 years ago?
It's really interesting to have attended both conventions because you do get a feel for just how different in mood and content these conventions are. In many ways, they're very similar. You know, they follow the same order of business. This convention is a couple of days shorter than the one was a couple of years ago. There is almost none of the tension that was there 3 years ago, or it is much lessened. 3 years ago, there were big issues being discussed related to restructuring of synod. There were huge elections in play, including an ousting of the incumbent president. And so people were really engaged in each of these battles, and each and every vote seemed like it was a bitter vote. Not bitter, but, you know, closely divided, hard, you know, whichever side won, it was by just a few percentage points or whatnot. Well, this time around, the delegates are largely united in many ways. But frequently, you're seeing resolutions pass with an unheard of for the Missouri Synod, you know, 70-plus percent of the vote. There's a lot more unity among the delegates. Now, having said that, there's also much less that you can predict about how they will go. Many of the delegates are new. In fact, the vast majority of the delegates have never attended a convention before, something like 75% have never attended a convention. So they are learning as they go. They are very independent-minded. They're not vote. You know, they're, of course, always the groups, the main groups in the Synod, although it's a, you know, shrinking group in Synod, would be what used to be called Jesus First or Day Started. You're sort of political groups that have rebranded. And they are, you know, they have their list out about who to vote for. The more confessional groups on the other side have their list out who to vote for. You're not seeing people voting lists. They're voting for whomever they want to, and frequently it looks like they're voting for incumbents or people with what they consider to be the right experience for the board. So it's an unpredictable group of people. It's a new group of people, but in many ways a largely united group of people.
What are the either the big issues that have been dealt with already in the first couple days of the convention? Business, I believe, got underway formally Sunday, but it wasn't really until yesterday that the business got going. What are the big issues that this convention, these 5 days, face in St. Louis?
Yeah, in terms of some of the most interesting things, one of the things that I found personally interesting was that 3 years ago, people went through the Blue Ribbon Task Force, is what it was called. It was a massive restructuring plan. And delegates pored over everything 3 years ago, and they largely voted in that restructuring. But a few things they rejected or tabled or, you know, out and out rejected by huge margins. And the person who ran that Blue Ribbon Task Force was on one of these committees, and he actually brought back some of the things that were soundly rejected 3 years ago. Well, they've been rejected again. Things like Lutherans organize their pastors in geographic locations. This is good because you get to know your brothers in the circuit, what we call it, the circuit, a local group of pastors. You get together to discuss theology and just provide support for each other. Well, one of the things restructuring wanted to do was change that to grouping people together by affinity. And that might sound nice. You could say all the people who are into contemporary worship then could go off in their own little circuit. All the people who retain the historic liturgy could go off in their little circuit. Well, the voters 3 years ago soundly rejected it. It came back again this election, this convention. It was once again soundly rejected. So I think that the Missouri Synod, with two completely different groups of delegates, is letting it be known that they want the two sides in these, in the worship issues, to work it out. That was a major issue, and it was a resounding defeat. Once again, it was something like 72% to 28% did not want these gerrymandered districts. There are a few other issues related to that. One would, right now, each circuit, again, that's each local geographic area, sends in two delegates, a pastoral delegate and a lay delegate, a layman. There's a resolution that would make it so that districts could decide who in their own district gets sent to convention. That means that many circuits would have no representation. That's still coming up. I think that will be a big issue, and it is favored by district presidents, of course. It centralizes power with them, or I should say it's favored by some district presidents who are inclined to think that's an effective organizational method. It might not be so effective. It might not be so popular with the delegates themselves, since they know that that might mean that they themselves wouldn't be at a convention. There are also issues related to lay deacons. We had some sort of like experimental programs with lay deacons, and they are very controversial. There might be some action taken on that. There are alternate routes to ordained ministry apart from the Missouri Synod's historic method of training with residential seminaries. This makes us very distinct in American Christendom, particularly among Protestants or non-Catholics. And a lot of people who are fans of this program of residential seminaries think that this is why we've been able to withstand so much of the progressive influences of American culture. Well, there are people who think that these alternate routes help fill needs that can't be met by people going through the normal routes, or for people who are interested in ordained ministry but can't make it to residential seminary. So that might be a hot topic. In fact, I think that might be going on tomorrow. I'm not sure. It'll be coming up here shortly. And so these are some of the big issues. And today there was also a discussion that was kind of interesting to me in part because it was passed so overwhelmingly, which dealt with women in combat roles. Now, you might remember a few months ago that the government now says women should serve in combat roles if they want. And it kind of happened without any opposition or whatnot. Well, the Synod spoke loudly today for the first time about women in combat roles and restated what we believe about distinct vocations for men and women. And I thought that was a very interesting thing. And it passed overwhelmingly, something like 92% or 96% to, you know, whatever was remaining.
Before we go to the break, you mentioned that the delegates, 75% of them, are first-timers. They are learning as they go. Well, it's pretty obvious as well that the current leadership of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, while they've been in office for 3 years, this is their first time conducting and actually organizing one of these conventions. Are they learning as they go as well?
Yeah, it's interesting. Our previous synodical president was not known for his theological acumen, but he was so impressive running a convention. It was, you know, I get to cover secular and religious conventions quite a bit. I have never seen anyone so good as our previous president. Now, our current president is a historian, a theologian. He's probably our most effective public theologian we've had in a long time, but I don't think anyone would have said he was particularly good at running a convention. I've actually been tremendously surprised. I think it's tradition in the Missouri Synod to have the president and the vice presidents run the convention. Of all of the president and the vice presidents, I actually think our president, Matt Harrison, is perhaps the most effective at running the convention. And there have been some bright spots also among the vice presidents. So it's definitely been a learn as you go, but it far exceeded my expectations. If you would have asked me 3 years ago how it would have gone, it's been he's pretty winsome on the floor and does a good job of sensing the mood of the delegates and when to rush things through or when to hold things for discussion.
With regard to the elections that were held largely yesterday and today for board of directors, for various boards of regents of all of the different universities, for other boards that comprise the various organizations of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, how would you characterize, are we kind of holding place in terms of who is being elected? Is it a shift toward the current administration and their viewpoint, or a shift away from it? How would you describe the elections and their outcome?
You know, I wish I had some really helpful way of seeing it, and I don't. There have been some small shifts toward, I would say. So when we just had our synodical election for president, President Matthew Harrison won with nearly 70% of the vote. That does indicate that the Synod is largely united on the direction they would like to see Synod go. But when you look at the lower elections, it is also true when they voted for the Presidium, who are our top vice presidents, they did the same thing. They voted overwhelmingly for solidly confessional, you know, Lutheran candidates over maybe the more church growth model or more generic American evangelical Protestant model. That was something that you definitely saw with the election of the vice presidents. When it gets to the lower boards, I see nothing like that. Again, I mentioned that there are lists that are out between the two groups. Nobody seems to be following the list. They seem to be generally keeping the same makeup of the boards, although some slight movement.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. We'll have more of an update with her on the 65th regular convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod after the break.
Rick Warren is the center of a spiderweb network that crosses every denomination in the world. And he has as much power, if not more, in the LCMS than Matthew Harrison.
Chris Rosebro speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
Think of Rick Warren as a guy who has a pan district within the LCMS. There are pastors within the LCMS who would sooner call up Rick Warren or some of the guys in his coaching network asking for help than they would call their own district president or, God forbid, Matt Harrison. In other words, Rick Warren is probably one of the most powerful men in our Synod.
You can listen to Chris's entire presentation and all of the presentations from the Issues Etc. Making the Case conference on our new audio DVD for a donation of $300 to Issues Etc. before Labor Day. We'll send you this audio DVD. For more information, look for the DVD logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
Continuing education for the Confessional Lutheran. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Apostles Lutheran Church is in Melrose Park, Illinois. We invite you to our divine service, which is held every Sunday at 9:15. Please contact us at 847-455-0903 or check out our website at apostlesmelrosepark.org. We are located just south of O'Hare Airport, where airplanes are continually going up. Here at Apostles, we glory in the one who on the cross was lifted up for the sins of the world.
Did Martin Luther's political writings lead to the freedom of conscience, the separation of church and state, and German totalitarianism? Divine Kingdom, Holy Order, The Political Writings of Martin Luther is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. You can read an excerpt at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase Divine Kingdom, Holy Order by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. Divine Kingdom, Holy Order, The Political Writings of Martin Luther. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is our guest. We're getting an update on the 65th Regular Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. She's a reporter in Washington, D.C., a contributor to GetReligion.org, joins us live from St. Louis, where they're holding the 65th Regular Convention of the LCMS. Before the break, you mentioned that the vice president elections in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's convention generally reflected kind of a give Pastor Matt Harrison the men he can work with, that he can agree with for the next 3 years, but not so much in the other boards. What does that tell you, Molly?
I think it's actually something similar to what we saw with the presidential election. People are extremely happy with the way Synod is going now. Now, if you remember 3 years ago, we had a crazy convention. We ousted our incumbent president. We did a massive restructuring of the Synod. That was a delegation that was angry. They did not like the shape of Synod. They did not like the contentious nature of what was going on. They wanted changes, and they wanted them now. You're seeing something very different now. Our delegates are pretty happy with how things are going. They don't see the need to fix something if it's not broken. And I think that they're saying, well, yes, we generally want things to be a little bit better. Maybe a little bit more supportive of President Harrison on the Council of Presidents and whatnot, the Presidium. But I think they're generally pretty happy. I think they also like one of the things that's interesting about President Harrison as opposed to his predecessor, President Kieschnick, is that President Kieschnick would be someone that people would generally say was aligned with the more, the generic evangelical side of Synod, the contemporary worship side. President Harrison is someone who is generally aligned with the more traditional liturgical Lutheran side. And yet they are very different in the way that they handle things. President Harrison works with people who are on the opposite side. That was not something you saw so much with President Kieschnick. And so I think you're actually seeing a little bit of that bubble down into how people are willing to have some people on board who might not be the same perspective as they are. They want us to work together. They have asked people, you know, you're seeing this reflected in the resolutions. They want people to work together. The Koinonia Project was given a big push of encouragement by the delegates. They like the idea of different sides working together and hashing out their disagreements. And so I think that might be what we're seeing with the elections in general.
Let's talk about some of those particular issues. I want to return to one that was decided both yesterday in one sense and today, and that is the issue of lay ministers that the LCMS has been struggling with for 24 years since 1989 when they first accepted the idea of lay ministers. I believe in direct opposition to our confessions on pastors and their calls. But you commented in a forum elsewhere that when this discussion was going down yesterday, and I think some of it continued today, it was confusing if you weren't fully informed on what was really going on here and the history of this issue of lay ministers in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Expand on that.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's actually pretty fairly clear, as I'm sure you'll agree, in the confessions of the Lutheran Church, what the requirements are for ordained ministry. This is not really a topic that is talked about a lot, but this is something that is definitely on the minds of a lot of delegates. What happened yesterday, and it's all sorts of maneuvering and confusing things, you know, the committee puts forth an idea, the delegates want to strengthen it or weaken it. But what happened yesterday is someone tried to strengthen a resolution that would sort of bring us back more closely to Augsburg 14, the item in our confessions that talks about what are the requirements for ordained ministry. But a very confessional vice president kind of gave the indication that he didn't think that was a good idea. And so I think people were confused about what that meant on the floor. They didn't know it just wasn't very well explained. It was not well debated. It happened at the end of the day. And so the delegates ended up voting it down. And that, I think, reflects, again, the makeup of the delegates as being new. They don't like complex amendments. They don't like, if something is considered somewhat contentious or whatnot, they might be more inclined to vote it down. And so people were freaking out, you know, outside of the delegate floor. They said, why could we not reaffirm what we believe in our confessions? This is such a no-brainer. And that's true. But unless you were really attuned to exactly what was going on, it was just a confusing moment on the floor of the convention hall. It definitely indicates that we need better catechesis on this topic or better discussions, but I don't think it means that anything was being rejected outright or a desire to go away from our clear confessional documents or anything like that.
On the issue of church fellowship, there's both internal and external, of course. You mentioned the Koinonia Project. Is it official?
Well, I think it's always been official, but I think people are anxious for it to actually move forward a little bit more than it has. And I thought that the Montana District did a very good job of encouraging that. They gave some particular ideas for how district presidents can be more involved in pushing this forward and really doing giving specific ideas of things to talk about. And it passed overwhelmingly because I think it reflects that people want these kinds of hearty, healthy discussions where we're honest about our disagreements, where we're upfront about them. I mean, one of the things that the delegates voted on is that these would be public where we disagree. So if someone is arguing a particular position, that it'll be made public. And I think that is helpful for all of the lay people who want to hear both sides of an argument and make sure that they are on the right side of it or whatnot.
In terms of external fellowship, two Lutheran church bodies, I believe both in Africa, have been ratified as fellowship partners. Tell us about that.
Well, yesterday, I'm sorry because I'm kind of in and out of the convention floor, but yesterday I did get to be there when we were hearing from the Siberian Evangelical Lutheran Church. There was also the Liberian Church in Africa that we affirmed fellowship with. It was a really interesting moment for the delegates. One thing that was interesting is that, you know, we've kind of been hearing that these people wanted fellowship with us for 10 years, and it wasn't happening. Well, I think a lot of hard work had to go into ironing out some of the remaining disagreements, into being clear about what it means to be in fellowship and whatnot. And then we also, of course, heard about the great progress that's being made with this humongous Lutheran church body in Ethiopia, which recently took, at personal cost to them, they broke fellowship with churches that had become heterodox, the Swedish Lutheran Church and our country's own Evangelical Lutheran Church in America. That was difficult for the Ethiopians to do. They just felt they could no longer in good conscience say that they were in fellowship with these church bodies that they felt had become heterodox, and they immediately reached out to the Missouri Synod. These are people coming to the Missouri Synod, coming for help, coming for resources, coming to send seminarians to get training. It was a really bright moment, and it really reflects a massive change in global Lutheranism. For a long time, the more progressive elements of Lutheranism were on the rise and sort of reaching out and doing missionary work and whatnot. Well, you know, as probably your listeners know, even in the U.S., the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America has faced something of a precipitous decline in recent years because of their move away from Orthodox Christian teachings. And so you're seeing this, like, complete global shakeup in where the center of Lutheranism is. And it's very interesting. I think it was very moving for the delegates to be a part of that, particularly given how rousing and solid these speeches were from the heads of these church bodies. And one of the things that the Siberian bishop said that I thought was so interesting is he said, you know, we don't vote on fellowship. We just recognize it when it's there. And we are in fellowship. We are two church bodies that are confessional, and we should be united. And so it was very moving, almost unanimous votes on these things, and showed probably the most marked point of unity during the convention.
Going back to the very beginning, in fact, the opening of the convention this year, the worship service, many, many remarked that itself set a tone, but it also drew a line between this convention and the last in terms of what was practiced last time,
yeah,
3 years ago, and as opposed to today.
Just to be completely personal about this, which might not be totally professional, but having gone to previous conventions, you know, the worship would be almost like the low point, which is not what you want. You know, it was cringe-inducing at times. It was very contemporary Christian worship. It was like not Lutheran. I mean, Lutherans are known for this beautiful liturgy and hymnody, and we wouldn't see much of that. And this opening worship service was beautifully done, and the sermon was amazing to hear the law and the gospel preached so clearly by President Harrison. And I think everybody needed it. And these can be grueling days. You don't like to fight with your brethren. You don't like to be having to make tough decisions. And to start off with this gospel message was amazing. And even, I'm not sure if your listeners heard about this, but at the end of communion, after they were distributing the sacrament, they thought that things would be wrapped up a little more quickly than they were, so they stopped with the hymns. And spontaneously, people broke into singing a hymn that was well known, and actually did such a good job with it that they forced the organist to start playing with them. And it was just a very moving moment in a beautiful worship service that reminded us of what we share together through the liturgy, through our hymns, through the pure preaching of the gospel. And it was, instead of being a low point or a frustrating point, I think it was a very uplifting and healthy moment for everybody in Synod, regardless of where they stand on this particular issue or that.
Molly will join us tomorrow and Thursday for daily updates of the 65th Regular Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is a reporter in Washington, D.C. and a contributor to GetReligion.org. Join us live from St. Louis, where she's covering the 65th Regular Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Thanks, Molly.
Thank you.
Our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July is called Divine Kingdom, Holy Order. It's a great and much-needed book, right at the lay level, treating Martin Luther's political writings. It said, largely unexplored, unexamined part of Luther's thought, but well worth understanding, dispelling the myths about Luther and some of the fallout of his political thought. It's called Divine Kingdom, Holy Order, The Political Writings of Martin Luther. You can get it from Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040, or you can browse before you buy at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the Issues Etc., Book of the Month for July, Divine Kingdom, Holy Order. Stay tuned right after the live broadcast of Issues Etc. for a best-of broadcast. Dr. John Kleinig teaching on pornography. You don't want to miss John Kleinig, and you also don't want to miss this subject. Listen now and 24/7 at issuesetc.org right after the live broadcast of Issues Etc. today. Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our Christianity 101 series talking with Pastor Stephen Parks about the doctrine of justification, and we'll also talk about the office of the ministry. Also tomorrow, we'll discuss Mary and Martha. Pastor Tom Baker will be our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening today, and look forward to talking to you tomorrow as well. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Does your church need a backup organist? The virtual organist service from Church Music Solutions is the next best thing to an on-site organist. Send us your musical choices, including liturgy and hymns. We'll assemble your service and send it to an iPad that controls your church's organ on Sunday. The result is genuine organ leadership on your instrument with your selections when you need it. See our videos on YouTube or visit our website at churchmusicsolutions.com.